Hello again, everybody. This is Lance Russell with Championship Wrestling with another big week. Join us right now.
Hey, welcome to the Double Dropkick Show. I'm Heath Mulliken.
I'm Mark Whitman.
And we are recording this, and as we were getting ready for today's recording session in the basement, I noticed on Facebook today is the 30th anniversary of Mick Foley's first match. Mm-hmm. And I know you have been a big Mick Foley fan, and I just wanted to take a few minutes to maybe do a tribute to Mick Foley, talk a little bit about his career, some of your favorite matches. I mean, this is completely off the cuff, completely no preparation.
Yeah, I don't have anything to go on.
Like I said, I know you're a big fan. You're a wrestling, South Carolina's second best wrestling historian.
Behind who?
Mooneyham.
Oh, get out of here. Nah, I'm just kidding. I like Mike. He's a good guy. He definitely is more of a historian than I'll ever be.
Hopefully he'll pass that torch to you.
It ain't looking like it.
So my first experience was with Cactus Jack, world-class championship wrestler.
Uh-huh.
And the thing, and we talked about Rob Killjoy in another episode, I feel the same way about Rob Killjoy that I did about Cactus Jack. Meaning, when I first saw Cactus Jack, I thought, that guy's crazy.
That guy's a nut.
That guy's crazy. I don't know what he's going to do, but I believe what he does.
Uh-huh.
And when Cactus Jack first came into World Class, he didn't. I think he was with Skandar Akbar, if I'm not mistaken. Or maybe he was just kind of a random guy and worked his way up. But I just remember he just had this crazy look about him.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he went to WCW, I was like, oh, I know this guy. It's Cactus Jack.
Yeah.
See,
I had heard the buzz about his matches with Eddie Gilbert.
Mm.
Which, if you there, some of them are on YouTube. They like had a series of matches where it was like a scaffold match and a cage match and like a last man standing or a Texas death match. It would have something like that. I can't remember what the third, but they did like this best of three stipulation match. And if you just, they're incredible, man. So if you haven't seen those, like, I'll get started with the matches you need to watch with that.
So some of that, I think, maybe from the Global.
Mm-hmm.
Which is now on the network.
Yeah.
But then also, he was at World Class at the time. World Class and was becoming the USWA, and they were merging with Continental. That's who they were kind of merging with.
There's also another early match of his from, I think it was Super Clash 3 that they put up recently, where he's like in one of the opening matches in a six-man match or something like that. I watched it the other. I can't even remember who else was in the match. I wasn't expecting that.
Right. Well,
there's Cactus Jack, and he's a real fan, and he's real young.
But, yeah, yeah. So when he got to WCW, man, he's just doing that elbow off the apron.
Well, you know, that's like how they brought him in and didn't know what to do with him.
Yeah.
Jim Cornette had seen him, and he told Kevin Sullivan, this guy, you got to see this elbow drop that he does. Off of the apron onto the floor, and they were like, "Huh?" So they just told him to do it because they were the way they got him over was to have him lose. And
mm-hmm.
It's very rare, but they would put him in with just a job guy partner, and the partner would get pinned, and then when the partner got pinned, he'd take him out and drop the elbow on him.
Yeah,
and that was the beginning of him kind of coming into the company.
Yeah,
was doing that, and it worked.
You know,
and he took that insane bump because he knew he didn't look great and. He didn't look like the athlete of the day was supposed to look. His belly was just a little big.
His hiney was
just a little big.
Yeah.
So that was how they got him over. I mean, and it was his idea. If I don't have, I got to make sure that everything I do looks
real. Yeah.
Because I don't look like Ric Flair and I don't look like Sting.
Yeah. He had the memorable matches. I know you've talked before about his matches with Vader.
Yeah, man.
In WCW.
Oh, what, awesome stuff.
What would be your favorite one of those?
Well, there's the big one where he took the powerbomb on WCW Saturday night, and Jesse Ventura broke kayfabe.
Yeah.
And it was well done.
Yeah.
Like, because Ventura was not sympathetic to anybody.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, Tony, I'm sorry. I got to go check on this guy.
Yeah.
So, it created this air of this is real.
Yeah.
Because, Jesse never does this.
Yeah.
Jesse never. So, he, takes and he goes down and he makes sure he's okay.
Yeah.
And it sold it. And of course, that led to the famous the spin the wheel, make the deal. Which the finish is kind of wonky.
Yeah.
But the match itself is incredible.
The Texas death match.
Oh, man. It's just such a good match, man. So that would be.
Hot summer. It's Snot Bubble.
Yes.
Would it be in your Snot Bubble Hall of Fame?
Yeah. Yeah. It's well, that and then when he and Sullivan got the titles and they had this series of matches with the Nasty Boys. And
yeah.
Somebody, and then Cactus and Max Payne wrestled the Nasty Boys.
Uh-huh.
And just had these. Brawls
yeah.
all over the arena, and they're really, really good. They're on all this stuff mostly is going to be on the network, but yeah, those matches were really good. And then his matches with Sting, where he went to Sting and wanted Sting to go 50-50 with him, and Sting said, "What do you you expect Sting? Have you not heard this story?"
Uh-huh.
So he goes to Sting and says, "We're going to do these matches. How about we go 50-50? And Sting's like, wait a minute, you expect Sting mm-hmm. to go out there and go 50-50 with a guy that hadn't been on TV in 6 months? And he's
yeah.
like, yeah, because it'll get us, it'll work.
Yeah.
And Sting listened to him and did it, and it elevated both of them, and it wound up being a really memorable feud.
Huh.
So, you know.
Wow, I did, dude.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, I know you didn't. That's why I'm the historian, and you're the guy that sits over and drinks Mountain Dew.
And hits record.
Hits record. But yeah, and it took him to the next level and made him a main eventer. Because if it hadn't have been for that, he would have probably just stayed in the mid card.
Right. I never really knew, hey, this guy's different, but I didn't get him
right.
all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about the transition from WCW to ECW.
I was planning on it.
I just got him.
You set me up. That's where I was going. And then he and Sullivan won the tag titles. He goes to ECW and he spits on the tag. He has this match with Sabu, which
yeah.
is for the hardcore fans was a dream match.
Yeah.
To see those two guys go at it. And he said, they break bottles over each other. And these aren't break. There's this sick spot where somebody's trying to break the bottle and it won't break. And you just hear that. Funk, funk.
Yeah,
bottle hitting.
It didn't sound like it didn't sound like a guy slapping.
It sounds like hitting somebody with a glass bottle and
yeah.
not breaking. And finally, the bottle breaks. But anyway, Sabu wins, and Cactus cuts this awesome promo where he says, "I don't. This might be the A to Z promo. I can't remember." Mm-hmm. Where he says, "Everybody from Abdullah to Zabisco left a scar on me."
Yeah.
And if I can't come here and beat Sabu, then this title doesn't mean anything. And he spits on the WCW
yeah.
title, and he got nuclear heat from
yeah.
Ric Flair, who just thought he disrespected the company and the tradition and all this stuff, and they fired him
yeah.
for it. And then he stays at ECW, and it was so good.
Yeah,
his run at ECW, where he becomes a heel by refusing to wrestle the hardcore style.
Yeah.
Because everybody was like, finally, we're going to get Cactus Jack in ECW.
Yes.
And he's going to come in here and he's just going to tear it up with everybody.
Yeah.
And he would go in the middle of the ring, grab a headlock, and lay down for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And the people hated him for
yeah.
it. Because they wanted to see the elbows off the thing, and he wouldn't give it to them. And finally,
it's
Terry
so
Funk
good.
Brings it out in him.
Yeah.
When he says, your wife's a whore. Your kid's a whore.
Yeah.
And he doesn't respond to it like Foley's does. And then he says, Eric Bischoff's a whore. And that's all it takes. And he
yeah.
just besmirched the great Eric Bischoff. And Foley goes nuts on him. But the crux of it was he was telling Tommy Dreamer, I went down this path. And all it did was wreck my body. And these people don't appreciate it. It's the Kane Dewey promo. Where he,
yeah.
And he's like, don't feed into these people. They're chanting you screwed up at people, and who are they? I'm not going to let these people call my matches for me. I'm right. Like, it doesn't matter how hardcore you are. It's too late for me.
Yeah.
But Tommy Dreamer, it's not too late for you.
Yeah.
If I can see you in the loving arms of WCW, put back on those sparkly suspenders, and you know what I mean? And he just cuts these. His promos on his ECW run are some of the best promos you'll ever see in the history of the wrestling business. Everybody knows Kane Dewey is right up there at the top of some of the greatest promos of all time, where he says, Kane Dewey, he sees the sign in the front row, Dewey Foley is an 8-year-old little boy, you sick sons of a, you know?
Yeah. And if you haven't heard the Arnold Schwarzenegger from John Andoska,
that's good stuff, man. That's good stuff. I mean, those promos and the matches suck. But it's like he intentionally was having bad matches. Yeah. Like, they're not Mick Foley Cactus Jack matches. They're not Mankind matches. They are Cactus Jack playing a heel by grabbing a headlock and laying down.
Yeah.
But they're good because that's the story that they tell. And then he finally comes back around.
Yeah.
He takes Mikey Whipwreck underneath his arms, and they win the tag team titles from the Public Enemy. And just his whole story arc, and then he leaves and he goes to WWE.
Yeah.
It's great. So, and his whole ECW run, and I've got that DVD that ECW released.
Oh, wow. I would love to get my hands on that.
Yeah, I'll bring it to you.
So let's before we talk about his time in WWE, we've talked about this before. The impact of Paul Heyman and ECW on so many, on Steve Austin.
Right.
Mick Foley.
Terry Funk.
So many guys that.
If it wasn't for ECW and Paul Heyman, like, we would have forgotten about Terry Funk.
Yeah. Yeah. He gave him a whole second.
Oh, such a third half of his
career.
And you don't see it on the network, but just like Funk coming out to the ring that night at their first pay-per-view to Desperado. Normally the music needs to be fast, and for him to just walk down with Desperado playing.
Yeah.
And they had this great video package that they put.
Oh, it was phenomenal.
Oh, I wish I could find it with Desperado in the background playing. And just like, he's this last outlaw. He's the gunslinger that's coming back for one more run, you know, just to prove that he can. To prove that he can still hang.
It was such great storytelling.
Yeah, it really was. And that's what Heyman did. I mean, he knew more than anybody else in wrestling how to accentuate the positives and hide the negatives.
Yeah.
He just knew how to do it. And with everybody from the top of the card, and we're going to talk about Foley, one thing I will say about Vince Russo that I don't think he gets enough credit for. And I don't give Vince Russo a whole lot of credit.
Right.
And nobody does. But when Vince Russo was writing a show, whether somebody was in the opening match or the main event, they all had a reason they were fighting.
Yeah.
And they all had a storyline. And you have to give Vince Russo credit for introducing that. I will never take that away from him.
Yeah.
Everybody had a reason to be fighting. They might have been ridiculous reasons. But they all had a reason.
That, to me, is one of the reasons that Raw was so popular back then.
Yeah.
It wasn't just that you had the big names. It's this, that from the beginning of the show to the end of the show, it was all storyline.
Yeah.
And now, to the detriment of, you had a lot of storyline and a lot of 3-minute matches.
True. And that's the problem.
Right. Because I think,
if Vince Russo would have had 3 hours...
He didn't have three.
It was 2 hours back then.
See, to me, there's a lot of things said in a promo that can be said in the context of a match.
True.
And that's just the art of wrestling that is missing in so many places.
To a guy like Foley.
Yes.
He could say so much in a promo and then back it up with his actions in a match.
Yeah.
He would tell you, you will not get me jumping off the ring apron. You will not get me taking the nasty plunge out onto the floor. You will not get me doing this hardcore stuff. And then he went in the ring and he backed it up by grabbing a headlock and laying down.
Yeah, yeah. So he gets to WWE and he's Mankind. Mm-hmm. And to me, from an outsider's perspective, you got this great character, Cactus Jack. Mm-hmm. That's what Vince does. Vince has always repackaged people. And I'm just going to tell you, from the beginning, I did not like the Mankind, the doo-doo brown trunks, the mask. I just didn't get it.
Right.
And obviously that evolved into something better, into something bigger. What's the story behind some of that?
Jim Ross was always telling him, you need to hire him, you need to hire him. And Vince didn't like him and didn't want to hire him because of his body and because of his look. But he finally said, all right, I'll give you a chance, but we're going to put a mask on him.
Yeah.
And that was that's how it happened. I mean, they had an idea for this character. Originally, the name was Mason the Mutilator. Was the original name of that character. And then it became Mankind the Mutilator. And then they eventually just dropped the Mutilator part. And Mankind was Foley's idea. He'd said, how about we do Mankind instead? And Vince said, okay.
Yeah.
And then they dropped the Mutilator. He went to USWA as the character first. And they would call him on TV Mankind the Mutilator. And they dropped it when he came to the main roster. And that was kind of the story. I mean, it was, all right, I'm going to give him a chance, but he's going to be done my way.
Yeah.
Because he did not like – he didn't get
the Cactus Jack character. And he made some chicken salad out of it.
It wasn't a bad character, though. I mean, it really wasn't a bad gimmick if you go back and watch.
Well, yeah, you're probably
– and you're talking about a guy that they brought in at the top of the card, too.
Right.
So as I go along, I'm trying to mention matches I think people need to watch. Like when his debut – he did something that nobody had really done before, and that was lay the Undertaker out.
Right.
And not only did he lay him out, he proceeded to get pinfall wins over him.
Yeah.
At major pay-per-views, and nobody had done that.
Yeah.
Up to that point, nobody beat the Undertaker.
Yeah.
That's the reason Undertaker wasn't the champ, because if they made him the champ, somebody'd have to beat him.
Yeah. Right.
And they didn't want that. I mean, they kept him strong.
Yeah.
Unlike today, where you take a good character like Bray Wyatt and beat him every time.
Yeah.
They didn't beat The Undertaker. And Foley came in and beat The Undertaker. So those first couple of matches that they had together, the Boiler Room Brawl's okay.
Yeah.
They did another match, and I can't remember what card it was on, but they just had like a wrestling match.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome. Like, they stayed in the ring. And I think Paul Bearer was in a cage for this match because he had already turned on Undertaker and sided with Foley. But you got to watch those matches.
Yeah.
And then one of his, I think it was his personal favorite match up until my match later on, was against Shawn Michaels.
Yes.
In Mind Games. If you haven't seen that match.
That's a great match.
Man, do yourself a favor. Go back and watch it. It's an awesome match.
Yeah.
And it was Foley's personal favorite match.
We watched that match as part of we were doing a review of a year of WWE, and it was a year where Shawn Michaels was just defending the title every month against all these different
people. And he was having their matches.
Yes.
Like, he went in and had this crazy brawl with Mankind. And he had a match where he played the little guy against Big Van Vader.
Like, I would love, like, in the pay-per-view era, meaning where there's more than 4 pay-per-views in a year. And I think we were at 12 pay-per-views, maybe at least 10 that year. I would love to go back and analyze which champion had the best year as far as the quality of their matches. But I think that year
Shawn Michaels would probably be.
There's the episode. Yeah, I mean, go back and watch all the main events.
Go back and watch all those. I don't know that anybody else has ever had. Maybe I'm not talking about drawing wise, but just against
quality
a variety
match.
Of opponents and the quality of matches. I don't know that you can top Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
Maybe Austin when he won the title and had the matches with Foley right after that, which we'll get to.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so watch the Shawn Michaels match. Watch. Then he kind of fades out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And he takes the big bump off the cage.
Yeah.
At Hell in a Cell, which everybody knows about, so there's no reason to spend a lot of time. He did a whole one-man show on it when we saw him in Greenville.
Yeah.
Kind of about that, so there's no reason to rehash that. But it gave him, it like, rejuvenated his career.
Yeah. Because
he was kind of on that Bray Wyatt path.
Yeah.
Of they didn't really know what to do with him.
Yeah.
And then Austin wins the title, they turn him heel, and they have this incredible match at Backlash after WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Where they brought, he's Dude Love now.
Yeah.
Know? So everybody wants to see Cactus Jack, and all he's been is Mankind and Dude Love.
Yeah.
I think, did he do Cactus Jack? I don't think he's done Cactus Jack yet. Because then he does King of the Ring against Triple H in the cage, because that's where the Dude Love come in. That's right. That's where Dude Love started, because he climbed up on top of the cage to do the, because they were he had done the great interview with Jim Ross. Have you seen that?
I've seen the Hell in the Cell with him and Triple H.
Not the Hell in the Cell. They did a cage match in the King of the Ring.
Okay.
When China was still, he was still Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Okay. Gotcha.
And gotcha. It was Mankind, and he had done the interview with Jim Ross where they turned him babyface. This was a, you know.
Oh, right.
Everybody's seen these interviews
where
he puts Jim Ross in the mandible claw, and he talks about, I wanted to be Dude Love.
Yeah. So
then they get to the King of Ring against Triple H, and he climbs up, and he opens his shirt up, and he's got a heart painted on his chest, and he drops the elbow. And, I don't think he wins the match. I think Triple H still won King of the Ring, but they had the spot.
Yeah.
And it got both of them over, man.
Yeah.
So then you get to Triple H, where he's feuding with Mankind again, and he's been Dude Love, and he's had the matches with Austin, which are great.
Right.
And they do the spot at Madison Square Garden, where he does the interview as Mankind, and he said, it ain't really my bag. And they bring out Dude Love. He said, it ain't my bag either. And then he comes out as Cactus Jack, and he beats Triple H. And Triple H, to his credit, as much as people want to talk about somebody burying somebody, when Cactus Jack come out, if he had done that Scott Hall deal where he does his fingers, ooh, I'm supposed to be scared of Cactus Jack, it would have killed it.
Yeah.
But Triple H didn't do that.
Yeah.
When the music hit, he sold it as like, what have I done? What beast have I woken up?
Right.
I think everybody should go back and watch how one wrestler is supposed to react in a situation like that.
Yeah.
Because Triple H nailed it.
Yeah.
He, on his face, showed the threat that Cactus Jack was. I have screwed up.
Yeah.
I'd like to get out of this situation if I could.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And he just did an awesome job. And then, of course, he has the matches, that brawl that he has at Royal Rumble with Triple H, where they brawl all over the arena. And then the Hell in a Cell match where he retires is so good.
And then he comes back as Mick Foley for WrestleMania 2000.
I'm not done. Because before that, he had a match as Mick Foley against Terry Funk on Monday Night Raw.
Okay.
Somewhere, like the timelines get confused for me.
Right.
But he has a match where he just comes out as Mick Foley.
Mm-hmm.
And he has this match with Terry Funk where they brawl all over the arena on Monday Night Raw. All these are on the
network.
Are on the Mick Foley.
Okay.
Please go ahead and tell them where they're available at, Heath. They're available on the Mick Foley Greatest Hits and Misses DVD. Most of these matches that I'm talking about, you can get that DVD. And yes, some of them are on the network, but I don't know that Terry Funk match is on the network from Monday Night Raw. And I don't know that the Triple H thing from Monday Night Raw in Madison Square Garden when Cactus Jack comes back, I don't know if that's on the network. Mm-hmm. I haven't looked for it. But they are on the Greatest Hits and Misses DVD. Proceed.
Are you done?
I am done.
And then that leads to WrestleMania 2000.
Is that what led to it? Or is it ECW coming back?
No, and, I just know he had retired, and he was gonna. He came out of retirement to do WrestleMania 2000 because he wanted to. He wanted to main event WrestleMania as Mick Foley.
Gotcha.
And that's when you had
that four way match.
You had the four way match in a different and he was. I think he was Linda McMahon's representative.
Yeah, he was.
In that match, and yeah. You're doing a great job.
Was that a good match? I mean, do you?
No, that was not it.
It was not. That's why I wasn't going. That's why I feel like I've hurt your feelings over there. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings, man. I thought this is what we do. I riff on you for stuff, and now you look like you got your heart broke, and I feel bad.
Hey, I'm just working over here.
But, yes, he comes back for WrestleMania 2000, and it sucked.
Yeah.
He was not ready for it. He was not intending to come back.
Right.
It had not been his plan, and it was obvious he put some weight on. And what are you doing over there?
I'm trying to fix something. I'm having a technical issue. This episode is going the way it's supposed to go because you're the Mick Foley guy. I'm not. I'm just trying to set you up to talk about Mick Foley.
I got you. You have to remember, I don't know dates real well, though.
Right. But you know Mick Foley.
But I do know Mick Foley. So then he has they're going to do the ECW one night stand. He comes back and he gets involved with Edge and Terry Funk, Tommy Dreamer, which leads to his match with Edge at WrestleMania, which is a great match.
Yes.
So I'd go back and watch that. And then you can pretty much skip over all the TNA stuff.
Right.
It sucks. Then he comes and he does the whole program with Randy Orton. And they had a great, great – and this becomes Mick Foley's favorite match of his career.
Mm-hmm.
It tops the Shawn Michaels match and becomes his personal favorite match is his match against Randy Orton. And you need to see the promos that lead up to it.
Mm.
Where Orton realizes there again, and Orton sells it, I have messed up.
Yeah.
Because Orton was doing that legend killer gimmick at the time. And then Foley comes out and he spits on Foley.
Mm.
And they do another promo where Foley dares him to spit on him again, and he does. And he said, "That's what you don't understand about me, Randy. I got kids. I've had a lot worse than spit on my face." And it just... Like Orton, he flips out and he starts punching himself and he juices the hard way.
Yeah.
By busting his own eyebrow open. And Orton just has this look on his face like, this guy's nuts. What have I done? And then they have the match and it makes Orton look like a monster.
Yeah.
Foley did his job.
Yeah.
He did what he's always done. And they had a great match and it's brutal and it's bloody.
Yeah.
And Orton takes the bump into the thumbtacks and... He starts shaking.
Yeah.
There's this moment where he's laid there shaking. Like, it's just, it's Foley's, like, last. It was his last real match, and it's great.
Yeah.
Like, it's a 5-star brawl.
Yeah.
So go back. You have to look and see what pay-per-view, because I didn't do any notes or preparation.
Right. Yeah, this was, I mean, for...
You just told me when we got here, will you talk about Mick Foley?
Because I saw, you know, like I said, it's 30 years since his debut. He had absolutely a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah.
He is one of the most memorable characters.
Uh-huh. Whether you like Cactus Jack or Mankind or Dude Love or Mick for Saint Mick.
Yeah.
The commissioner. I mean, when he's...
Talk about a guy. I mean, here's a guy who... Because after the Hell in a Cell deal, he realizes, man, I can't be doing that.
Right.
And we talked about this before, and he goes more into the comedy. And the whole Socko thing and the Rock and Sock connection.
Yeah.
I mean, to me... We've talked about Rick Steamboat before, who's one of the greatest. But Ricky Steamboat, he was a one-note wrestler.
Oh, no doubt.
It was one of the greatest notes we've ever seen or
heard.
That
one song was one of the greatest songs ever written.
But Mick Foley, in my opinion...
His song was like Stairway to Heaven.
Right.
Ricky Steamboat's was.
Yeah.
Mick Foley's more like the Rolling Stones.
Right.
You get all kind of different stuff, you know what I mean?
So to me, like, when I look at his career and I see the versatility of just a heartless monster to Mr. Socko and everything in between, he just had a heck of a career.
Yeah.
Stellar commentary.
That is stellar commentary. You know, at Mick Foley, I think he's got what it takes.
But when I first saw him, never would have, you know, I right. never would have thought of that.
And I was just the opposite. When I first saw him, I went, I like that guy because he's different. Same thing with Rob Killjoy.
Yeah.
I like him because he's not doing what everybody else is doing.
And again, the thing with Rob Killjoy, I've seen him play, I've seen him do the comedy,
uh-huh.
and I've seen him do the serious, and I've seen him be crazy.
Yeah.
And
he's good at
all. He's versatile, and he's good. And if you're listening to this right now, you can book Mick Foley to come in and do an appearance for you.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see them on the same card. Yeah. I'd love to see that. Let's make that happen.
I'd like to.
I just think that would be, oh, that'd be great. You know what else is going to be great? What's These that? Ribs we're about to go eat.
You ain't lying. So tell them who you are. Listen, you know the deal. We got the Audible thing. Click on the banner. We give you this for free. You suck if you don't do anything to help us.
What's the website?
He's at Heath Mulliken. It's doubledropkick.com. Check out our website. Click on a banner.
Where are you
Stitcher's
on Twitter?
On Stitcher and iTunes. He's at Twitter on at Heath Mulliken. I'm at Twitter on at the DDK Show, and we're going to eat some ribs.
Well, I guess Mark just walked out of the studio. I guess that means we're done here.
And that's it this week, fans. So long for now.